Bonsoir, j'ai le plaisir de vous retrouver pour un nouvel entretien. Aujourd'hui, j'ai l'énorme plaisir de recevoir Menachem Pressler. Menachem Pressler, bonjour.
Bonjour.
So, this interview is because you're in Paris to play tomorrow night in this new concert hall, La Scène Musicale.
Yes.
So, you just come back from the Scène Musicale. You had a rehearsal. How was it?
Don't ask me. I felt quite good. I felt I will hope to feel better tomorrow. Because, you know, you never think that you played at your best. You always feel there is one more step to be reached. And I always, as I did with my trio, I never felt that's it. I always felt that's not bad, that's good, but there is a better way. And so we were always, always trying for the better way.
Yes, but you recorded so many records. At which time did you decide to record a masterpiece? Or you say, now we can do it?
No, it's not this way, because there was always be a critique. So when we did a masterpiece, of course we had played it then a number of times and had come to a conclusion that we have a point of view. The point of view to represent the piece. We, you know, especially at that time when we created the Beaux-Arts Trio, the chamber music societies didn't want trios. They always said a trio is a poor man's piano concerto, a small orchestra, or it's an accompanist with two string players. We created it in the thought that there is a balance, and the balance, we were fighting for it, and I think we achieved it. As a matter of fact, that which made Beaux-Arts really well known was its ability of creating an equal balance between the three instruments. The piano was not taking over, the violin was not missing, the cello certainly was not missing. It helped, of course, that when we started, we had three extremely fine players. I mean, I would say two extremely fine players.
Right, we can say three.
Because the violinist, as you know, who used to be in the Calvi Quartet, became concertmaster of Toscanini, had a quartet in his name at that time. His name in Paris was Gilevich. In America, it was Gile. So, and he had the Gile Quartet, which was a very fine group, very fine. And I played with them. But what he was a fantastic artist. Very demanding, not very diplomatic always. So there were, as you can imagine, enough fights to fill a whole book. But at the end of the fight, there was always a unanimity of what is the ideal, where is it driving to, what does the composer express. And oh, you know, we are speaking now about the great ones. We speak about the Beethoven, the Mozart, we speak about Ravel, Debussy, we speak about Dvorak. We could speak about the Rachmaninoff, which we recorded, or we recorded Ives, the American, which, by the way, is a beautiful piece, really a beautiful piece. So we tried our hands, and we had always composers writing for us, so we tried our hands on everything. There was nothing that we did not try, and find beauty in it and find something to express and something to represent that which we wanted. We recorded actually 61 records for Philips, which came out now in a big album. And we won every prize, I mean, Grand Prix, the Disc, the Grammy, the best record of the year in Germany. But that never influenced our idea. We always thought, if we already did this, wonderful. The nicest part, I must admit, was when we won the Grand Prix, the Disc, with Debussy and Ravel. Of course, I must say I was very thrilled with it. And I'm sure my friends too.
And tomorrow you will play composers you have a strength link with, Chopin, Debussy, Mozart. We will speak about them. But you also begin with Heindel, Chacon. Yes. And I remember there was another pianist who liked you very much, Sviatoslav Richter. It's his repertoire sometimes, this Heindel.
I was in love with Richter. I thought it was the greatest that I had ever met. And although I must tell you that now I heard Sokolov play, and I heard him in Verbier, and I was completely overwhelmed by the greatness, the beauty. The interesting part was, while I was influenced and still think the greatest that I heard was Richter, he, Sokolov, believed the greatest was Gilels, because it was under Gilels' hands that Sokolov won the Tchaikovsky competition. But, who can say, somebody can say, I like the best fish, I like the best meat, I like the best vegetables. Who can say what is the best? Taste has to be developed, can be developed. And the more you develop it, the more refined it gets, and the more you find. You may end up as a piece that you love the most, but in which you haven't even thought about. And that used to be the story of my life. Because each time we found something new, I was the most enthusiastic, the most enthusiastic. I had the greatest of respect for Gilles, absolutely, the greatest respect. I had the greatest love for Bernie Greenhouse, whom I thought was surely the most beautiful of cellists that I had ever met.
You will play also Debussy, so there is a strength link, because you won this Debussy Prize in 1946, and that was the beginning of your career in the United States. You have a special relationship with Debussy.
Strangely enough, yes. But there's two. Luck in my life, or God, you can call it whatever you want, had a tremendous influence. I was a student in Israel at that time of Leo Kestenberg, who was a student of Busoni and was actually Ministerialrat in Weimar Republic in Germany. He came to Palestine, Israel, to become then the director of the Israel Philharmonic, music director, repertoire, etc., inviting conductors.
Excuse me, just to cut you, but at that time, did you hear Toscanini playing with the orchestra?
Strangely enough, Toscanini I never heard. I did hear many of the great ones, especially one fantastic Italian who was just like Toscanini. He held his hand to the side. What's his name?
Guido Cantelli, maybe?
No. Cantelli was a kid. No. The same age as Toscanini. And in a way, competing with Toscanini. He came to Palestine with Benedetti Michelangeli. They had a concert together. And what I remember was exceptional. He started the concert with ba-da-da-dee, ba-da-da-dee, ba-da-dee, dam-pa-da. When he finished with that overture, I saw the musicians of the Israel Philharmonic just let their arms down. He had exhausted them completely. What was his name? A really famous Italian.
We'll check.
Yes, okay. Was very, very wonderful. And I, of course, would be seated in one of the upstairs seats. Most of the time I smuggled myself into the... I had arrived as a refugee, and so it was not... I couldn't afford, in a way, everything. But I did hear everything. So I afforded it my way, yes? I'm still saying that the young pianists of today, or young violinists, cellists, flutists, fagotti, have a wonderful past to rely on. That even though there was a world war going on, one that specially tried to exterminate my people, the Jewish people, to which I belonged. And not only did not succeed in doing it, but did not succeed in taking away the achievement that the Jewish people have done for music, which is remarkable, really remarkable. And then, of course, you name the great pianist. There is Arthur Rubinstein, a Jewish person. You name Arthur Schnabel, a Jewish person. You name Vladimir Horowitz, a Jewish person. You name... It really is very difficult to... There is one... When Perlman, who was very much helped by when Otto Judson didn't want to take him and said, the public is not ready yet for a cripple like Perlman, and took another very good violinist, but not a Perlman. Isaac Stern, who was at that time a younger Isaac Stern with Yurok, said to Yurok, take this boy, pay them $500 a month so he and his mother can have a decent way of living, because they were really very poor. And he did that. And then Isaac got sick, and Yurok took the boy to do the tour instead. And I happened to hear him on a late show on television. He had come, and the man was saying, my God, you're completely unknown, and you have done so well, which is remarkable. But I have to ask you a question. How come all the great violinists are Jews? How come there is a Heifetz, there is a Milstein, there was an Elman, there's a David Oistrakh, we called him King David, of course. Spivakovsky, no matter which one. So he said to the young Perlman, Perlman was at that time maybe 21, 22. He says, do you know a reason for that? Oh, Perlman, I said, I think the reason must be because they are all circumcised.
I don't know if it helps. Anyway, I was looking at your program tomorrow night, and we spoke about Debussy, Heindel. There is also, we'll speak about Mozart, but I wanted, maybe I saw that you're playing Chopin, three mazurkas. They are very nostalgic, maybe for a composer who left Poland and didn't come back. And maybe for you, it's an homage to all the people who, in Poland, maybe who disappeared.
What I know about Chopin, I think he was even an anti-Semite.
Yes, I know, but I mean, it's maybe a way for you to...
I know. I identify only with his beauty. Chopin was a magician. He touched the piano, and the piano starts to bloom. He touched his mazurka, which he brought from Poland. The mazurka danced. The mazurka dance. He brought the Polonaise. He made Polonaise an important work in music literature. He wrote his sonatas. They were mostly how the German would call it a Singspiel, because all of it was this deep, great feelings of melody, of rhythm, of that which really, when you think of Poland, you must say that if someone represented Poland, and we know, you know, you had a Szymanowski, you had great Polish people, but Chopin was somebody by himself. I love him for that. I also forgive him in my heart for his anti-Semitism. But that was you went into Poland and you found it left and right. And I accepted that because we found it everywhere. We found it in Spain, we found it everywhere. That we had to fight that which these poor people that came out of Egypt made the trek through the Sinai Desert until they found a place in Palestine and Israel, and if I had a King David and I had a King Solomon and had prophets who helped them, had prayers which they said for 2,000 years and still say that. I myself was a boy born to a very Orthodox family. I didn't stay Orthodox. My life demanded so many different things. I became quite free. But I never forgot where I came from, what I am part of. And therefore, my music is that what I am, Jewish. I have to admit that, especially in today's world, you don't speak about that. But I do speak about it. And since I was also part of that miracle that happened, that we replaced 6 million of people who were killed and started a state, a place where everyone, if he was Jewish, was secure. A miracle.
Maybe I make a mistake, but when you came from out of the Germany, a part of your family came from Poland, and you had the choice to go to Palestine, or maybe you hesitate. I read somewhere that your part of family hesitate to come back to Poland before the war. No?
No. The thing was, my father had a Polish passport, so he went to Poland at the time when the Germans asked the Poles to leave. But he came back to take his family, and he wanted to go to Palestine. His brothers were already in Palestine. His sister was in Palestine. And he had actually saved some money and had it in Palestine. But we had to wait for a certificate. And we left Germany. As you know, we went to Trieste from Germany. But on the way out, the German border police said, "Where are you going?" We said, "We are going to Trieste, to Italy." "Why are you going to Italy?" We said, "It's vacation time." And the German led us through. 30 days later, Germany was in the war. Of course, the German border police had no idea that that would be happening. And actually what happened was an attack on Poland.
But when you arrived in Palestine, you didn't have good pianos. Like, what was the pianos you were playing with? Because it was a very poor country.
It was a poor country, but many people who emigrated officially brought beautiful pianos with them. I had a little Steinway upright. And what was bad for me was that in the heat, the ivories went down. So I had to practice, and I did, on the wood. And of course, would get splinter in my fingers. But it didn't bother me. That's actually how I started. And I would say, I had that enormous, enormous passion that, because already as a little boy in Germany, I played the violin. My father had played the violin, and poorly, so I played the violin. But my brother was taking the piano lesson, and when the teacher came, he always was tired, and I took the lesson. And then one day my father came and said, "That's impossible. You can't have piano lessons and violin lessons. You have to have schooling." And why I said the piano, to this day I don't know. Ask me if I'm sorry, no. I have the richest literature that one could imagine. Yes, I do miss one great thing, the Beethoven string quartets. I never played those. All the others, I mean, the Mozart quartets, wonderful. But we have Mozart quartets. We have Haydn. We have, I played many of the sonatas. Played all the Haydn trios. 44.
Yes, I know. I was wondering why you don't play a Haydn sonata. Because you love so much Haydn music.
It is true. To my first Carnegie Hall recital, I did play a Haydn sonata. But, you know, what I'm playing is, you can't better it. The Vasakalia that I'm playing is beautiful, grand music, wonderful pianism, wonderfully sounding. The Mozart Fantasy and Sonata is one of the great statements of Mozart. You really have to deeply grow to have an insight in this adagio, this sonata that he has written. It was not an easy matter. And then, of course, having the wonderful Debussy, that was the easiest part for me. But the Chopin, I selected mazurkas that are among his most difficult ones and most beautiful ones, and always ending inconclusive. Fabulous. When you hear the da-dee, pa-da-da-da-dum, bim-pe-dum, there's nothing as beautiful as that. And then it ends da-dum, pi-dum, pi-dum. It's not requesting applause from you. It's just requesting, give me your heart, you will be rewarded.
And you will play, you spoke about it, Mozart and Fantasy in C minor. For you, you can't play them separately, you have to play them together. I mean, the Fantasy and the Sonata.
No, you can play them apart, of course you can. But together, they are a monument. And into this recital, if you don't play Beethoven, great Beethoven sonata, then play the great Mozart that Beethoven would have appreciated.
Yes, and you just recorded your last CD, which will be issued we hope in few weeks, and it's a French music. You have a special link with French music. You knew Paul Loyonnais, Robert Casadesus, many of those important French pianists.
Oh yes. I had lessons for one whole summer in Fontainebleau. I was a student of Casadesus. But Casadesus was a very close friend of Guillet, of my violinist. As a matter of fact, when Guillet wanted to leave south of France to go to America, to buy a boat ticket, you needed gold coins. I mean gold. But if you had gold, which he did, you would go to prison. So you didn't say that you had gold. He wrote to many friends, please send me that money, I'll return it to you. There was only one who answered by return mail. That was the great Robert Casadesus, who sent in the money. Guillet, of course, returned it. The only, in a way, funny thing that happened. Guillet had brought with him a bottle of the finest French wine, a 75-year-old Bordeaux. And he was coming and holding it with his violin over his shoulder. And he was going, and he tripped. And he let the violin go. He had to, of course, protect the violin. So he let the violin go. So he never gave Casadesus the violin due to him. And Casadesus really was non-Jewish, but the greatest possible gentleman you can wonderful. Truly wonderful.
And on this CD, there is a masterpiece where I really want to listen by you. I mean, it looks like written for you, Les Oiseaux Tristes in the Miroir by Ravel. It's music for you.
Indeed, I take that as thank you so much for that compliment. I take it as serious. I feel it as if he had written it for me. It is a very strange thing because, you know, music is a very personal expression. And when we started to learn the Ravel trio, we had the metronome mark of Ravel for the first movement. And when we played it, I said to my two friends, look, I can't play that tempo. It takes away the beauty of the first movement. Both of them jumped on me and said, what kind of a talk is this? You know better than Ravel how it should go. I said, I don't know better than Ravel. I only know that I can't play it that way. It kills the piece for me. They would not accept that. Until one day, Gillet, who was with his Calvé Quartet, they played all the time before Ravel and played, went on tour to England, France, even came to America with Ravel as a conductor or whatever. And they told me then a story. And the story was they had played for Ravel the Ravel Quartet. And Ravel said to them, why did you play the last movement so fast? And they said, no, it is your metronome mark, master. Ah, Ravel said, you know, and he gave the name of a good quartet, but they looked down on that quartet. And he said, the way they play my last movement, I like it. And it was much slower than the metronome. As soon as they said that, I could say, you see, it's possible to convince Ravel. And I must say, I convinced my friends. We became famous for our Ravel trio. We got the Grand Prix, the disc, we got the German record prize, etc. Played in the tempo in which I felt.
It was your first very famous LP, no? This Ravel trio. I don't know if it's the first LP, but it was one of the most famous.
Yeah, it was one of the most famous. No, the very first one which we did, we still recorded part of it for MGM and recorded. The very first we did for a record club because nobody wanted to take a trio. Wherever we went to try, we tried for RCA Victor, and they said, no, we have the million-dollar trio, Heifetz, Rubinstein, and Piatigorsky. And even when I said, can't you use the $1 trio, they said, no. Then Columbia, which our manager, Judson, was president of Columbia, was president of the New York Philharmonic. President of Philadelphia Orchestra, was of Columbia Records. But Columbia Records says, the director says, we don't need a trio. We have Istomin, Rose, and Stern. We don't need a trio. So our first trio was for a record club called Concert Hall, done in Geneva, which won the Grand Prix.
You're making a career, you started with a career alone, now you're making a career as a soloist. During 50, 54 years, that was the Beaux-Arts Trio. I mean, chamber music, you were speaking about tempo, the tempo you discuss with the others, but when you play alone at the concert, you choose your own tempo when you are alone. Does it change a lot if you play in a concert hall different?
It actually does change. It changes in different concert halls of the acoustic. It changes because of the caliber of the piano. It changes also by the reaction of an audience, how they listen. You know, some audience listens very avidly. Some listen very coolly and just become warmer later and later. You see, the later and later forces you also later and later. There are so many I even am influenced by a page turner. You know, I used to have page turners, which was something. A page turner who sat next to me, and each time he got up to turn the pages, looked at his watch. Had his watch, and he did. I didn't know what he was referring to. But like I had page turners, I even had a page turner who didn't turn the pages. He sat, and I saw he was listening. In an ecstasy, but you still needed the page.
And so we'll see tomorrow which tempo you will choose for these pieces you will play. So it will be Haendel, Mozart, Chopin, Debussy, or Debussy, Chopin. And there are two other composers now that you recorded two and alone. It's Beethoven and Schubert. And Schubert, I mean, it looks like Schubert, it's more and more important maybe for you.
It is true. Through the trio, you know, we played the last two trios many times. All my different groups also, you know, we played it. And I loved it with the greatest possible love. Not less than Debussy, not less than Beethoven, not less than Mozart, than anything that I played. The two Schubert trios were actually my last word. Also the Schubert Nocturne, which we played. So if you tell me that in Schubert I found the moment of my greatest feelings, yes, I could. You could probably be right. I would not fight it. I would feel honored that I was able to convey this because of this enormous love that he created. And when you think of it, there's a man who gets to be 33 years old and dies.
Mr. Presser, we could listen to you hours and hours, but you have a concert to give tomorrow in the Seine Musicale and to get rest before. So is there any word you want to say about your future CD, Debussy, Ravel, or to speak about this program?
Future CD, of course, I look so much forward because it is dedicated to the woman who gives my life a reason, who has given my life a sense of beauty and has devoted herself in a way that only a lucky man, a very, very, very lucky man, could have gotten a present of her presence like I did to have her on my side. So that is very, 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 very special. And she, in her way, of course, makes all my performances part of her life. She used to know the greatest of them. She was 23 years old when she got to know Arthur Rubinstein, who was 83. And there was a 23-year-old girl living with the 83-year-old man. And that has stayed as the love of her life. And I'm competing with that. So I've got a hard task ahead of me. I'm still trying to compete. I know that I myself adored him, loved him, admired him. When I hear him, as a matter of fact, just the other day, I did hear Spanish music played by Arthur Rubinstein, and I felt, my God, this man, any music that he touched was ennobled, was enlarged, was made to become a vital, vital instrument for people to love what is great music played by a great master. That's my ideal. So you take it from there. And I hope that France will be kind to me and invite me back to this wonderful, wonderful hall. How lucky that they could have built a hall like this. It is just too beautiful for us.
Mr. Pressler, the words you used for to speak about Rubinstein, I can use them to speak about the way you play. So thank you very much to have answered to those questions.
You're very kind and warm, and thank you for coming.